The Clay Lion by Amalia John. Read by Lorelei King. Prologue. I heard it through the wall from the other room. It was faint at first, but then came on a little stronger. There was a moment when I was sure I was imagining it, hoping, praying. But then I heard it again, the low cough that always came, always. I resisted the urge to go to him, but my feet were moving before I could stop myself. I paused at the door to the hallway, waiting, listening. The world was imploding around me for the third time, and more than ever before, the full ramification of what the cough signified weighed heavily upon me. I knew it was over. It was the end of the dream. For all of us. I padded down the hall quietly and stood at his open door. He was there, as he often was, lounging on the bed reading nonfiction, probably historical in nature, perhaps for his world history class. He was a voracious reader. That fact had never changed. I studied his face, with his cheeks that were clearly not chiseled, but slim. He was chewing at his bottom lip, not out of nervous habit, but out of comfort. He didn't know I was watching him, which made the moment all the more special, until the cat meowing at my feet alerted him to my presence.
"What you doing?" he asked, without looking up from his book.
"Nothing," I replied, inching into the room. "What are you reading?"
"About the fall of the Roman Empire."
He looked up and saw me, really saw me looking at him. And, like always, he could see right through to the core of my soul.
"What?" he admonished. "What is it?"
"Oh, brother," I wanted to scream. "I'm about to lose you again. Only this time even the hope of you is lost, and I can't begin to explain it to you." I averted my eyes quickly and climbed on the bed with him. We sat there side by side, heads resting on the headboard, looking ahead, not at each other. He was so close I could feel his warmth. Time passed. Several minutes, in fact. He finally accepted that I wasn't going to willingly share what was bothering me, and so, knowing me as he did, he tried another tactic.
"Do you remember when we were little, when I'd get up early before Mom and Dad would let us wake them? I'd come to your room instead. You'd let me climb under the covers with you so I'd be warm, and you'd read your books to me. What were those ones we read over and over a million times? The Adventure of Doodle Bear, Doodle Bunny, Doodle..."
"Doodle Beetle," I answered quietly.
"Yeah, The Adventures of Doodle Beetle. I love those books. I wonder if we still have them around somewhere."
He looked at me again, gauging whether or not I was ready to talk. I smiled at him. Not because of our circumstances, but because of the shared memory. There were quite a few during the course of my second trip. Not as many as the time before, but enough that I was able to keep my purpose under wraps. The first time I returned to him, I'd almost given myself away on more than one occasion. I was horrible at remembering some things would be different, that there was no way it could all be the same. One small decision could change everything. I knew that all too well. Over the months, I made the mistake of mentioning shared experiences from our past a number of times. There were several instances when I was forced to act aloof when he no longer shared my memory. I had to pretend I'd dreamt it, or that perhaps the event happened with someone else. But I'd gotten better. I rarely talked about the past unless he brought it up first. For this reason, the moment was sacred. He coughed. Once. Twice. Three times.
"Must be catching a cold," he said, laughing. "Probably shouldn't sit too close. And we better not tell Mom. She'll quarantine us."
He winked at me. "Must be," I replied, scooting over out of pretense, not out of fear of some unknown virus. I knew he had nothing I could catch.
"You think Mom has any cough drops in her bathroom?" he wondered aloud as he swung his long legs off the bed.
He pulled himself up, crossed the room in two strides, and was out the door. The moment was gone. forever.
I returned to my room and sat at the desk, not knowing what to do. I stared out the window into the forest just beyond the edge of our yard. The trees were beginning to bud. Tiny patterns of pink and gold played in the barren branches. New life. Trees are amazing, as is so much of nature. They know when it's time. Time to grow, time to sprout new buds, time to lose their leaves and go dormant for the winter. It all has to do with the amount of daylight the leaves receive on any given day. During the summer, the sun shines on the leaves for 15 hours a day, giving the chlorophyll in the leaves plenty of sunlight to produce the glucose the tree needs to survive. But by autumn, the sunlight the leaves receive is down by several hours a day, causing a chemical reaction which forces each leaf to close the trap door at the base of its stem, which connects it to the branch. Once the trap door is shut, glucose cannot exit the leaf and water cannot enter. The green chlorophyll dies off, and the true beauty of the leaf is momentarily revealed before the leaf breaks from the branch, falls to the ground, and dies. As it was for the leaf, so it would be for my brother. His time was coming yet again. I was almost positive that whatever needed to change to reset the outcome had surely taken place. But if the cough was any indication, that wasn't the case. In time, my brother would die. I'd failed to stop the inevitable. The only question now was whether I'd have the courage to stay and watch it happen again. Chapter 1. The first time Branson died, the original time, as I would come to refer to it, I almost died with him. Not literally, but figuratively. My soul broke into 1,000 tiny pieces I didn't think I would ever be able to put back together well enough to sustain a normal existence. Months went by. I moved in and out of my foggy reality, one that didn't include my beloved brother. Slowly, over the course of many months, I pulled myself out of the pit I was in. I grew obsessed with the idea that I wasn't living the life set for my soul. Clearly, something was wrong with my timeline. I felt that perhaps Branson's death was caused by something I could fix. I set about to rectify it. After months of gentle persuading and outright begging, I convinced my parents to let me use my trip. They weren't easily convinced, knowing that once you used your trip voucher, you could never travel again, unless, of course, another voucher was freely given to you, which rarely happened. And so I began the laborious process of petitioning the federal government to use my trip with the hope of saving my brother's life. The paperwork I was forced to fill out seemed endless, and for good reason, I supposed. When the ability to time travel was discovered, it was at first quite expensive and reserved only for scientists and those who could afford its hefty price tag. There were a handful who served as pioneers, courageously sending their consciousness back into their own bodies within their own lives to record how small changes would affect the outcomes of their personal timelines. Unfortunately, as with all technology, as the science behind the travel became easier to replicate and cheaper to create, more and more people were able to gain access to the equipment which would allow them to travel back into their own lives. But with growing numbers of voyagers came larger and larger problems. One of the best documented problems involved what came to be known as the snowball effect. In essence, when early travelers returned to their lives at previous points in history, researchers assumed that since the past had already happened, they would be able to simply relive the same paths step by step. They quickly found that it was impossible to do. Initially, timelines seemed unaffected by very small changes in day-to-day activities. However, after travelers began returning to the past repeatedly and for longer and longer periods of time, it appeared that those infinitesimally small changes began to accumulate into what would become more noticeable changes. For example, one of the first women to travel, Dr. Rhonda Smalson, chose to relive her honeymoon.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?